It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It is a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. Halloween is a holiday that comes to us in costume. It wears a mask covering a much older and much different mask. Under that mask, another one. And after we unmask Halloween, we find some spooks from the depths of ourselves and our world. Since you have a lay service next Sunday that will also be dealing with symbols and myths connected to the concept of the goddess, I've decided to take a slightly different approach here, using less myth and more history and social commentary so you don't get over-mythed. Mythed out. Let's start with some recent, almost silly history. In 1967, by Lyndon Johnson's presidential decree, Halloween in this country officially became UNICEF Day, when little children dressed as make-believe goblins frighten you into making the sacrifice of some spare change. If you go back another century, Halloween first became a national event in this country after more than a million people from Ireland emigrated to the United States after the Irish potato famine of 1848. At that time, it was the adults, not the children, who dressed up in costumes, pretending to be all kinds of evil spirits and other supernatural beings. They visited homes where friends made offerings of food and drink to them. So it was partly a creative way to party. But that, too, was a caricature and a mask. Halloween itself is a kind of mask put on over something much older, much more primitive, more powerful, and perhaps more healing. We know how and when Halloween was invented. The Christian Church invented Halloween and All Saints' Day in the 9th century, and then added All Souls' Day a century later. They were invented to cover an ancient Celtic festival known as Samhain, just as Christmas was moved to December 25th in the year 336 to cover the birthday of a solar deity named Mithra, and just as Easter was a Christian cover over older festivals celebrating the vernal equinox. Our November 1st was the Celtic first day of winter, and it was the first day of their new year. So Samhain, which is spelled Samhain, but pronounced Samhain, was to the Celts something like Rosh Hashanah is to the Jews. It was a day of reckoning and a day of atonement. Above all, Samhain was a time when the barriers between the human and the supernatural worlds were broken, or as we might say today, the barriers between the conscious and the unconscious worlds. They believed that the whole spectrum of non-human forces roamed the earth to take revenge for human violations of sacred duties. To bribe the gods, that's always our first move. They offered animal and sometimes human sacrifices. So this beginning of the new year was a terrifying time of year in the old days. It's not surprising they needed some relief from it, and I wouldn't be surprised if the custom of dressing up like goblins and spirits went back to the very beginning. This is such fantastic talk. Gods, demons, goblins, witches, spirits. When you hear things put in such fantastic supernatural ways, you can be pretty sure that you're talking about something very primitive, something that has probably been part of our human psyches since we've had human psyches. This business of supernatural powers and unseen forces sounds a little spooky nowadays, and a lot of people are uncomfortable with it. Most of us don't like to think that invisible forces actually direct much of our lives. But they're still present, they still do, and they're still often fearful, though there may not be anything that we would call otherworldly about them. Let's go to a different level of history to find a metaphor for exploring this Halloween business. 5 or 6 centuries ago, before the Spanish and the English began sailing around the world, world maps looked very different than they do today. For one thing, they were a lot smaller. One of the most interesting things about those old maps, as any of you will know who have seen them, is that in the unexplored areas, the map makers used to print, "There be monsters here." Now, once we'd explored and incorporated these new areas into our maps, the monsters disappeared. But when those spaces were still unknown, we thought they must be filled with monsters, because we tend to think that everything unknown might be filled with monsters, as most of our science fiction movies still show. Like unfinished maps, incomplete selves and uninformed worldviews are havens for monsters of our imaginations. It's where they love to hide. The unknown is usually fearful, and to defend against it, we create what quickly become tyrannies of partial visions, walls of comfortable biases, happy ignorances, to protect us from the monsters that always seem to lie just beyond the limits of the familiar. In that way, we're still a lot like the medieval map makers and sailors. And Halloween, or Samhain, is one of those special times of the year that open the door and that offer us another chance to incorporate the unknown, to dig deeper into ourselves, and to make our world bigger. When we can assimilate the unknown into ourselves, the monsters disappear. What we cannot assimilate haunts us like goblins and demons forever. Another way of saying this is that life's deepest problems can't be solved. They have to be dissolved. By enlarging our maps, bringing in more light, and incorporating the things that we fear, the solution of the world can't be found on the surface. It's not that simple. It has to be complexified before it can be big enough to spread out a full-sized map and begin filling it in. But we don't tend to do this, do we? What we tend to do is to stick to a kind of comic book simplicity. Our heroes are big, bulky physical characters, big bodies, thin characters. Rambo. Rambo was an angry adolescent who never grew up. I don't think he ever got a job. He was just angry. Professional boxing matches get millions of viewers at $50 each on pay-per-view television to watch a few exciting minutes of two guys beating each other senseless. $50, it's more than we spend on an opera, on a concert, on a good book. Wrestling matches also earn big bucks, and they feature cartoon-like characters with huge bodies and caveman actions. Some preachers often seem to describe God as though he were just like a bigger version of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Powerful, fearful, interested in obedience rather than in our ability to make subtle, grown-up distinctions about morality and ethics. I don't think that's a service to the concept of God. Movie superheroes, wrestling champions, even the sense of the heroic today. These things have become like brute versions. And this simpleness doesn't serve us well. And I don't think religions have helped this picture much. Too often, people speaking for religion define the refusal to believe in these fantastic kinds of gods as faithlessness. That's wrong. The worst form of faithlessness is the fear that the truth will be bad. The worst kind of faithlessness is the belief that there be monsters here, when what there really be here is our failure to see, to understand, to assimilate the nuances of difference into ourselves and our world. So I look at our world as a kind of a masked ball. It certainly makes traffic jams more interesting. Or sometimes I look at our world as a lot of us playing ostrich, refusing to see beyond very simplistic terms, shrinking our world and turning it into a fantastic kind of video game between heroes and monsters and winners and losers. Ostriches hide their heads in the sand, maybe out of fear, maybe out of denial. But when they do it, they're vulnerable to everything they can't see. And so are we. The trick-or-treat game of Halloween is like this, too. The game was played most directly by the Irish adults of 150 years ago. Their trick-or-treating was almost like saying, reward our masked phony role or we'll do terrible things to you. That's what trick-or-treat meant. This is the message of hate groups, too, and I don't think that's a coincidence, because they're also masked groups. When a group like the KKK throws its tantrums with its own masks on, it's saying, support our non-integrated rage, or we'll hurt you. When we're wearing the masks and become the roles, we tend to think that our simple certainties are letting us see the world more clearly. It's why we can take such definite and often violent action. We're so sure we're right. But really, the masks are blinders, narrowing our field of vision, burying our heads deeper in the sand. And then, everywhere we cast shadows by blocking the light, something deep inside of us whispers, there be monsters here. But the monsters are parts of ourselves that we haven't learned how to incorporate, how to include on the map. The monsters are not external dangers, they're internal failures of integration. There's a rule in religion, and the rule seems to be that either our world has to get bigger, or our armies do, to protect against the imagined monsters beyond a world we've made too small to include them. I'll give you some examples of how we draw lines and create monsters to defend against a world or a script that's too small. A few weeks ago, I spoke about what I was calling the dark god of capitalism. I tried to persuade you that putting profits ahead of people is a kind of script for a society that has unavoidable and terrible consequences. Think of it as a script. If that's the plot of life, if we are measured by our financial success, if it's really that simple, if that's a measure of our worth as people, then financial failure is not only a personal failure, it's also a moral failure. And we treat it that way. The poor people, the losers, are no longer thought of as our brothers and sisters, but as failures, almost like India's caste of untouchables. Then we draw lines on our maps to keep them away. They become invisible. They have vanished from television commercials. They've almost vanished from television and media coverage completely. But not all the lines we draw are invisible. Some of them are built of reinforced concrete. In Austin, I-35 is one of those lines. We all know what it means to refer to east of I-35 and west of I-35. There be monsters east of I-35 because we don't know how to incorporate them into our world. The more people there are without a realistic chance of making a decent living, the more people there will be who make indecent livings. And the more people we put into our growing number of prisons, there be monsters there too. And other unassimilated people may not be considered monsters, but they become invisible. They rarely appear on our maps. The more than 16% of children in Austin living below the poverty line are invisible. The roughly 40 million Americans without health insurance. Our child mortality rate, the highest in the developed world. The so-called working poor, an amazing phrase invented to describe people who have jobs and still can't afford a house. These are among the areas of our society that don't make it onto our maps, that we don't know how to incorporate into the body politic. It's a human failure. We don't know how to think of them or treat them as brothers and sisters or children of God, so we call them other things, and the fact that we call them other things is the clue that we can't get them onto our maps. We call them things like the poor, the disadvantaged, the homeless, outcasts, prisoners, sometimes monsters. And still, the number of people from whom we distance ourselves and of whom we are afraid continues to grow, and we don't see that our society is playing a masked role that is not worthy of us, like ostriches. Our masks are our blinders. They reduce the size of our world. They draw the lines between our kind of people and those other kind of people that we have other names for. Once the map's complete, it's like a vicious circle of self-fulfilling prophecies. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Could it be different? Is it naive and foolish to hope for a change as fundamental as enlarging our world? Am I just spouting ignorant, childish preacher talk? I don't think so. We've done it too many times in too many ways. We just don't seem to be doing it very well lately. But let's look back at what we've done, at how much the world has enlarged in just the last century and a half. 135 years ago, black people were freed from slavery. 50 years before that, no one would have believed it could happen. Just over 80 years ago, women were given the right to vote, and our world got bigger. Less than 50 years ago, our public schools were ordered integrated, and less than 40 years ago, it even happened in Texas, the last state to integrate its public schools. During the past 30 or 40 years, we have seen huge increases in the numbers of women graduating from colleges, law schools, medical schools, other schools to which they could not have been admitted a generation or two earlier. Women have gone into space, been nominated for vice president, become presidents of prestigious schools. I think that the University of Chicago was the first such school to hire a woman president. She had wanted the job at Yale, where she taught and the school that she loved, but Yale made it clear to her that they would not hire a woman as president. I served on a committee with President Hannah Gray at the University of Chicago, and I remember thinking on several occasions how foolish Yale had been to lose such a woman. The range of acceptable sexual identities has expanded within our memories in ways no one would have imagined possible 50 years ago. And while some in the religious right still try to restrict religious options, the fact is we are now beginning to accept across the society and to accept as natural an immense range of religious options and styles. I will be offering one of the prayers at an ecumenical Thanksgiving service next month in which at least 8 major religions are represented. That could not have happened during the days of Ozzie and Harriet. In all these ways, and in more ways that you can think of as well, we have enlarged ourselves. We've enlarged our maps and our world. We have done it. We do it. And with each enlargement, each new incorporation, more monsters vanish, and they're replaced by fellow citizens, brothers and sisters. Don't think we can't change. Don't think we can't become more whole, more inclusive, more noble. It's a realistic hope. We've been doing it. And while we still have a long way to go, some of the strides we have taken seem gigantic. Each time, in order to grow, we have to confront some of our individual and societal biases and fears and bigotries. Each time we have to take off another mask. Each step of growth involves incorporating more former outsiders into the organism of the body politic and expanding the membership of the human family. Each time we do it, we are reaching out to another group of people and saying, "We welcome you. You are one of us." Those are simple words, but you've said them or heard them this morning, and you know how powerful they are. We welcome you. You are one of us. It's not hard to make monsters vanish. Sunlight kills mildew, and it does a good job on demons and goblins, too. But first it takes being aware of them, and it takes the courage to confront them. In the movie The Wizard of Oz, the monster is dissolved in an unusual way. The Wicked Witch of the West is finally destroyed, dissolved, when a determined girl throws water on her and she melts. You know, I don't think it was the water that did it. I think the water was just stage business. What dissolved the witch was a girl having the courage to confront her face to face without blinking. It took a girl who was not afraid of anything. The trick looks like outward magic, but it isn't magic. It's growing up. 100 years ago, Ambrose Bierce, in his Devil's Dictionary, defined a ghost as the outward and visible sign of an inward fear. One lesson of Halloween is that all of our ghosts are outward and visible signs of our inward fears. Another lesson of Halloween is that ghosts vanish when enough light is shined upon them, and that fears once faced can be transformed into possibilities. And second thought, maybe that's magic after all.